everyone, and welcome back to the Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola, very happy to be joined on this special Thursday 90-minute edition of the show by one of the TDR old timers. Literally the only thing about him that's old, Dan Evans returns to the show. Dan, how's it going?
Good, John, great to be with you. I've been told I have an old soul, so I guess that's two things.
Yeah, you do. You were like basically the first ever producer for the show way back. Way back when?
Shout out Brett Ehrlich. But yeah, let's say
that's true.
One and a half, too. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, he doesn't count. Forget him. He's fine. He left us, okay? He's supposed to be doing Fridays, but he's not for a bit. So screw him. I'm taking him out of the history book. His name has been scrawled out of the white book. Anyway, very glad to have you here. Whenever we have a guest on, especially a guest who hasn't been on in a while, we try to make sure that we have content for them to talk about, stories and news and all that that they will be interested in. So, I know that you have a couple of interests. One is, for some reason, Ben Shapiro. The other is checking in, you know, on Meanwhile In, we check in on other countries sometimes. You have a special section of that specifically for Grift Nation. So we've got some Grift for you as well.
Yummy for my tummy. Let's go.
Exactly. Okay. Well, thank you everybody for being here, regardless of what platform you're on. Appreciate you being here. We'd appreciate it even more though, were you to hit the like button, share the stream so that people know we're live. Why would you do that? Well, because we're not a right wing outlet, so the algorithm isn't gonna do anything to boost us for some reason. Have you been checking in on Facebook? How that's working? Judd Legum, check him out on Twitter. It's amazing stuff. Anyway, please do that. And as we go through this, we're gonna occasionally be checking in with the audience, see what y'all are talking about, whether you're tweeting hashtag TDR live over on Twitter, commented it up in the Twitch, maybe send in some super chats. We'll check in and see what's going on. But I do wanna remind you though, as with every day this week, we're doing 90 minutes now. You know, we're gonna grow until eventually there's no break. We're just a 24-hour show. But the reason we're doing that is we wanna provide a lead in to the awesome Dr. Rashad Ritchie's new show, Indisputable. In the beginning of its 8-week special run on TYT, starting immediately after the Damage Report at 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. He's had some amazing guests. Cenk was on, Killer Mike was on, Senator John Ossoff was on, Adrian Lawrence joined him. Today they have the former DOJ spokeswoman for the Trump administration and co-host of the legal podcast Advisory Opinion, Sarah Isker, is joining Dr. Ritchie. Is that gonna be another one of his big debates? I don't know. You don't know, you're gonna have to tune in to find out. But it will be indisputably an entertaining time. So you're definitely not gonna wanna miss that. With that said, Dan, are you ready to jump into this thing?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Okay, let's do it. We're gonna start off with some rough stuff, and then it's gonna get rougher, and then it'll get briefly very cute, and then it'll get fun. So check in on that, stay tuned. Anyway, let's do this. Representative Ilhan Omar is calling out the band of Democrats that have, for some reason, called her out in public with their insane read of comments she made about American foreign policy. She's saying that they are harassing and silencing her after they issued a late night statement criticizing her for comparing war crimes committed by the US and Israel to Hamas and the Taliban. So we've got a lot on this, but let's start off with the comments that have led to the letter from these Democrats and what will probably be 6 weeks of Fox News commentary.
I know you oppose the court's investigation in both Palestine and in Afghanistan. I haven't seen any evidence in either cases that domestic courts can both can and will prosecute alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity. And I would emphasize that in Israel and Palestine, this includes crimes committed by both the Israeli security forces and Hamas. In Afghanistan, it includes crimes committed by the Afghan national government and the Taliban. So in both of these cases, if domestic courts can't or won't pursue justice, and we oppose the ICC, where do we think the victims of these supposed crimes can go for justice? In both of these cases, if domestic courts can't or won't pursue justice, and we oppose the ICC, where do we think victims are supposed to go for justice? And what justice mechanisms do you support for them?
Dan, am I crazy? What what is the controversy here? Crimes have been committed in these places by all the groups that she named. There's very good reason to fear that domestic courts won't be able to, in an unbiased fashion, investigate them. The ICC, and she's talking about some specific cases in the ICC, but I don't even think that she would need to be for this to be an acceptable comment. What's the scandal? What is going on here?
I mean, the controversy directly is that Ilhan Omar is challenging the forces of power that keep our like military interests going, essentially. Like, there's a certain correct agenda and a correct way to approach things and say things when you're talking about foreign policy. And it's to always prop up or never at least attack our allies in the Middle East. And so this, like, you're right when you kind of set it up, John, that this is going to be the next 6 weeks of Fox News fodder, because they are so far past talking about policy or any like real agenda that's happening in the United States domestically. They're going to move this foreign policy thing because they know that it can probably excite people who are in their base, who are really just looking for anything relating to Joe Biden faltering. And there's this also tinge of being able to point things at Ilhan Omar and all of the racism, sexism, and Islamophobia that kind of comes surrounding that. So unfortunately, it's going to be a great punching bag, but it has to be acknowledged that what she is saying here is really rational, and it's just following the letter of international law that, of course, should be recognized. But you're kind of getting the tell there is that when international law is brought up in these circles, the response is, "Oh, you don't really believe that, do you? This is American interests and American interests abroad and our allies abroad and our friends abroad for our own reasons. So it's the laws don't even apply."
Yeah. Well, look. There's so many things I want to say about the response to it. The fact that, like, and people in the chat are pointing this out. The only part of this entire equation that matters is that it was Ilhan Omar. I think if virtually anyone else said what she said, it would be fine. Rashida Tlaib would get in trouble, probably. Maybe AOC. That's about it. If anyone else said exactly what she said, there would be no problem. But let's run through a couple different aspects of this. So first of all, let's acknowledge some of the context historically. This dispute over her comments comes more than 2 years after she faced public pushback from both parties over comments seen as anti-Semitic. The House GOP raced today to turn the statement that came out from those dozen Democrats last night into a political weapon against the congresswoman, with leaders likely to plot floor action on the chamber floor next week. But unlike in 2019, Omar's latest remarks have drawn no specific complaints of anti-Semitism from fellow Democrats. And I don't know how they would, since she's talking about Israel, yes, and Hamas, their crimes, Taliban's crimes, the Afghan national government's crimes, the US's crimes. She is being quite equal in her condemnation of needless civilian suffering and death at the hands of all of these different groups. But the Democrats have now said, you know what, GOP, you want to attack her? Let's make it seem as if it would be bipartisan to do that. And so they're gonna try to get her kicked out of her committees. They're gonna try to get her kicked out of Congress. I mean, never mind that like 8 days ago, Marjorie Greene said that the vaccine thing was like being sent to the gas chambers in Auschwitz. They didn't have a problem with that. That wasn't anti-Semitic, but a criticism that's as equally condemning Hamas as Israel, that's going to be seen because she's Ilhan Omar as anti-Semitic. Continue.
I was going to say, to that excellent point, really fast, that you've made about comparing it to Marjorie Greene's things, there were some comments on the right where it's like, okay, this is kind of a little bit too far. We don't need to compare like masks to anti-Semitism. Like there were some people that was like that. So those thoughts were in the right wing discourse. But like you said, John, they have the ability to respond to that in any similar method that they are planning to respond or have responded already in Ilhan Omar in a similar fashion with a similar ferocity. And they're not doing that because they don't like Democrats. They don't like brown women, and they don't like anything Ilhan Omar is saying because she's speaking truth to power.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, is this crazy? I know we're going to talk about this later on, but does this kind of just feel like the critical race theory thing? Like, how dare you ever acknowledge that anyone we like has ever done anything wrong? I want to live, like Republicans will spend 10 straight minutes talking about how libs need safe spaces, and then they'll spend the next 10 minutes saying, how dare you ever acknowledge uncomfortable, inconvenient truths. The US has committed atrocities and war crimes. And honestly, like they're saying it's a false equivalence to say that the US and Israel are in any way comparable in terms of the crimes they've done to Hamas and the Taliban. I think that they're right, but not in the way that they mean. They're saying, of course, that nothing Israel or the US has ever done could ever rise to the level of what Hamas has done. It's the exact opposite. The US has literally dropped nuclear weapons on cities. Like, the idea that Hamas, in their wildest fantasies, could ever do a tiny fraction of the damage that the US has frequently done. Pick a country, honestly. Go to Laos, go to Cambodia, go to Vietnam. You want to talk about war crimes and atrocities? You're really going to say that our past is clean? We have nothing to fear, worry about? And having a representative who's willing to acknowledge that is a problem, except mainly it's that she is a woman. She's, as you pointed out, brown. She's a Muslim. She's a refugee. How dare she come here and ever criticize the country that she should be so grateful took her in? That is what I feel like is simmering, not even really in the background of this entire conversation. She's supposed to come here, be thankful that we helped her, shut up, don't try to get involved in politics, certainly don't criticize this country. I feel like that's the foundation for this whole conversation and a lot of latent racism on top of it.
Yeah. My last point I'll just say is that you can tell, and the reason I harp on bad faith actors so often, so all the time, is because you can tell when they are throwing accusations of anti-Semitism around. And then in the next segment, we'll say, people are complaining about racism way too much. It really doesn't exist. It's not a problem.
Totally.
Or it's so clear when they want to use the same things they say are being weaponized by the left. They say the left puts racism and critical race theory out everywhere so that white people feel guilty all the time, and they weaponize that. And they put in their great replacement theory, racism, all that stuff. But then when it turns around and they get to play the anti-Semitism card, they don't stop. There's not a hint of irony as to what they're doing rhetorically there being the exact same thing. It's a bad faith argument if you can't see the difference.
Exactly. Well, let's turn to the inevitable next section of this. Ilhan Omar, now under fire from both some Democrats and every Republican in the country over incredibly rational, saying, I would argue, necessary for the growth of our country comments about American and Israeli war crimes, says that she's receiving death threats, because of course she is. This is America after all. So we're gonna play a little bit of a voicemail that she posted on Twitter as an example of what we're seeing.
They destroy cultural heritage, they destroy history, just like Ms. Ilhan Omar. Because Muslims are terrorists, and she is a raghead, and every anti-American communist piece that works for her, I hope get what's coming for you.
Okay. So I asked all of you, are you surprised by that? Are you surprised by that or any of the others? Dan, are you surprised that that's the comment she got?
John, what about the context? Doesn't context matter there?
Please provide some context for me, Dan.
No, like if you remove the bleeps, it's actually much worse. You
don't get that. That's true. We're protecting that guy.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, I kind of do think, because there was a point where the Republican Party, George W. Bush even, was during the lead up to the war in Iraq trying to say, no, Muslims are not our enemies. Stop confusing Muslims and Sikh people. It's totally different like groups. Let's try to like be friendly with our neighbors. I remember John McCain had to assuage or like calm down a woman on stage one time who was saying that Barack Obama can't be trusted because he's an Arab. And John McCain had to say, no, he's a decent family man and not an Arab, let alone that was like a weird comment to make, that those two are a dichotomy. But like, you've gone from very recently, I mean, it's about 10 or 15 years now, but the Republican Party was looking like, hey, we're obviously hitting the accelerator on Islamophobia through our foreign policy, but at least on a social level, let's try to carry the compassionate conservatism thing a little bit. But yeah. No, in 2021, it's completely thrown out the window now. And like, that's the mainstream of the Republican Party, not because like a major pundit is going and making that like death threat call himself or herself, but because these people are repeating the same talking points. This like, cultural destruction of values and Muslims a terrorist, and like where's either he hearing those things, or is he constantly getting those fears abated and like massaged, and like why is he constantly getting triggered by those things? And the answer is right wing media, because 100%. That is where it's moved to. And this is where you can see, this is the edge of the result. As you can see where it happens right before it gets violent. And so our response to this needs to be appropriate in that regard.
Yep, 100%. Yeah, you can't tune into Fox News without hearing, you know, that BLM are terrorists, and you know, like we're gonna have references, like the attempts to tie you know, Ilhan Omar and other members of the squad to Hamas directly. Like this, it's not subtle. It's the most bash you over the head programming and propaganda, but it is there. Well, she had to say this about the death threats. This is incited directly by articles like this, which we'll show you, and far right politicians like this, and is enabled by a political culture in both parties that allows and often fuels Islamophobia. And she is right to say that it is both parties. I hate both sidesism. I've been very clear about that. But when it exists on both sides, you do have to acknowledge it. And so take a look at Fox News. Ilhan Omar says America, like Hamas and the Taliban, has committed unthinkable atrocities. Well, look, we clearly have. I don't understand if Hamas had, let's say, drone struck a wedding and killed dozens of civilians, would that not be a war crime? Wait a second, it wasn't Hamas, it was us. I know you couldn't have seen that coming. So what, is that not a, I guess, you know, okay, it's kind of uncomfortable to drone strike a wedding, but we make great sneakers, so I guess it's free. Like you get one free, I suppose. You can nuke a couple cities and that's okay. You can commit a few genocides, but let's not talk about it. None of this is debatable in any way, which is why they don't debate it. They just shut it down. They're not saying we should have critical race theory domestically or for our international policy, and we should have something that focuses on the great humanitarian work we're doing. They're saying, don't talk about it, don't teach it, don't learn about it. And whether it's a teacher teaching a kid or Ilhan Omar acknowledging historic realities in interviews like what you saw right there, nope, just don't engage with it. This party that loves, they love a debate. Except in some cases, and they would really prefer if there was no talk of this.
Yeah, it's so disgusting. Like there's a Lauren Boebert tweet that maybe you'll get to in a moment, but like it's just the things that people are saying and further putting gasoline on this fire. Xenophobia is alive and well in America right now. And this is not to be alarmist or scaring, but these are like elected officials, regular people who are starting to gen up this hatred, and it only ends in violence. It only ends in violence. So like it's only like it sucks to kind of be in this position where you see all of this calamity happening in slow motion, and you as an individual can't really do much about it because of what's ingrained in the country for so long. All you have to do is really just try your best to inform other people and say, hey, what if the shoe was on the other foot, right? Like how would we respond instead of seeing drones that we're just kind of annoyed with for like surveillance reasons because we think our neighbor's snooping on us, we think, oh, that drone over there, that could be a rocket that could kill me and my family, because it has like countless times before, because this happens every couple of weeks over here. That's what it's like to be on the other side of American foreign policy and what it has been for my entire life and definitely longer. So Ilhan Omar is attempting to reckon with that. Other people should. And I hope that Democrats, I mean, if Democrats are truly progressive, to also put Ilhan Omar in the hot seat, because Ilhan Omar was saying that Joe Biden and the new kind of era of Democrats that are coming in right now would be a little bit more progressive. I expect more Democrats, not just from the squad, to show up and provide some color for Ilhan Omar here, because what she's saying should not be controversial. What she's saying is firmly grounded within human rights. And it can't just constantly be these strong people taking the fire all the time for the truth.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And there are a few that are defending her. We also have, as you pointed out, Lauren Boebert tweeted, Ilhan Omar, honorary member of Hamas. Just compared the US military with the Taliban. So she just compared a congresswoman, serving US congresswoman, with a terrorist.
Yeah, no, she's literally saying we have terrorist sympathizers in Congress and it's been normalized by the mainstream media. So don't trust any media but ours or Fox News's, the Newsmax's, because we're telling you the lies. And also, they're defending terrorist sympathizers. So you should see your antagonism against them as a life or death situation, because they're coming for you. They're coming for you in a cultural way. And this is in 4K. The video and the screenshots are here. They're doing this live because they are priming their base for violence. And it just, we have to call it out clearly. It's bleak and it's grim, but that's what they're doing.
Exactly. Yeah, never mind that compared the US military with Taliban and acknowledged Taliban atrocities, but she's leaving that part out. Yeah, you're 100% right. They're priming them for violence. I am amazed that we have gotten a couple of years in to the squad serving in Congress without one of them being the target of successful violence. Obviously, there has been attempted violence against them in multiple cases. They want Ilhan Omar to be assassinated. That is what they want. And when they do it, Tucker Carlson will give a monologue about how dare they imply that there was anything political about the assassin. It was just a random person. You should be so angry at them that they would smear white people with this. And that's, God, I hope that I'm wrong. But that's the direction, like Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity are gonna blink when the bodies start piling up. The natural outgrowth of their advocacy and people like Lauren Boebert as well. Okay, we do have to take our first break. When we come back, we've got good news, sort of, for the environment. Isn't that exciting? As well as really bad news when it comes to cops and some rough videos. But we're gonna get through it together. I'll see you after this. Okay, everyone, let's jump right back into this thing. The Keystone XL pipeline is dead. Long live the not having it, thankfully, because it probably would have ended up being a massive environmental and cultural disaster. It is actually dead, though. Is that amazing? Good news, good environmental news, Dan. The pipeline is not going to happen. It was going to be nearly 1,200 miles long and would have carried 800,000 barrels a day of petroleum from Canada to the Gulf Coast. Now, after environmental activists spent literally years, much of it we covered here, making the case to President Barack Obama that approval of the pipeline would be a devastating blow to his efforts to fight climate change, back in 2015, he announced that his administration would reject its construction permit. Now, there was wrinkles, obviously, with Donald Trump along the way. But earlier this year, on the day he was inaugurated, Mr. Biden, I included this so that we can have some discussion about it later, who has vowed to make tackling climate change a centerpiece of his administration, rescinded the construction permit for the pipeline, which developers had sought to build for over a decade. That same day, TC Energy, the company behind the project, said it was suspending work on the line. So we have some reactions to this, but really fast, Dan, let's acknowledge it is good that he has helped to finalize the death of this pipeline. It is interesting, though, to continue to talk about how fighting climate change is a centerpiece of his administration. I don't know that shutting down this pipeline necessarily warrants that as a continued description of the Biden administration.
Yeah, really fast on the Biden administration. I'll definitely say that it feels like one of those things where it is a thing that Joe Biden can point to in the future when he does something that is less climate friendly, where he can say, hey, look, I did this one thing, so on balance, it's all right. I actually have been good for climate justice. I shut down the Keystone pipeline. I stood out there with my boots myself that one time. I was there myself, Jack. He's gonna do this whole like bit where he's going to try to seem like he's tough on the climate on a couple of things, but if I'm making sort of an early judgment on Joe Biden right now, he's going to be one of those politicians who is on climate. I hesitate to say this, but I think he's going to still be beholden to a lot of the major industries that have kept the Democratic Party from making more decisive movement on climate in the past 10 years since Al Gore was making documentaries about this. But really fast, I do want to say that the Keystone XL pipeline, like closing and being done, is thanks to the work of indigenous folks who were there basically defending their land. And these are people who, like, unfortunately, our political system, we just so thoroughly underrepresent a lot of communities, but especially indigenous communities, when a lot of the machinations of our society, as we're like industrializing more heavily, directly result in poisoning their water supplies, the limited water supplies they already have, because they aren't getting any resources, because it's so hard for them to get representation. So this should be a really, like, great moment. I hope it gives hope to a lot of folks out there who may be like disillusioned with the power of movements and people organizing together and being strong as possible. Because like, if some of the most marginalized people in American and Canadian society can possibly like make some effort to stand strong against major titans of industry like this, then there is some hope after there. And I'll get whatever hope I can from the damage report. Honestly, we've done any great stories all the time, so for sure.
That's why we're trying to focus on it. It's positive, and yeah, it was years of work, difficult work. We showed yesterday with the Alabama coal miner strike how activists are treated during these actions. So great work. A reminder that while progress is rare and slow, this is the only way that you actually get it. And yeah, it's easy to become apathetic or disillusioned. I am disillusioned right now. Also, there's this weird backlash to organizing and activism that I've seen brewing online that seeks to elevate fairly explicitly. Like, no, politics is really about watching shows like The Damage Report and Twitter, which is great if that's how you make your money, but that's not actually how progress happens. It should be a motivation to get out there and actually do stuff. No, organizing, actually getting out there, getting candidates elected, pushing for the issues you care about, that's how you get it done. And so let's tie it to another issue that we've been talking about recently, which is, of course, Enbridge Line 3, another pipeline that's being protested right now. Activists are seeing the termination of Keystone XL as maybe a precedent that President Biden can be pushed on this. You have, let's see, Kendall Mackey, who's a campaign manager for 350.org. We've had representatives from 350 a few times, saying this victory puts polluters and their financiers on notice. Terminate your fossil fuel projects now, or a relentless mass movement will stop them for you. And I really hope that that is true. I will say though, and this really goes to what Dan was saying about him being beholden to these interests, it is a little bit easier to sort of like just hold the pillow down on Keystone XL for a couple more seconds when it was already there than to creep into the room with the pillow. 100%. I don't know why I went with that metaphor, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah. I'm just gonna let that sit. Let's move on.
Anyway, okay, so I do wanna do a quick fact check though, because Keystone XL is dead, but sometimes there is zombie misinformation around projects like this. So you're gonna get a bit of that with Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming, who said, President Biden killed the Keystone XL pipeline and with it, thousands of good paying American jobs. On inauguration day, the president signed an executive order that ended pipeline construction and handed 1,000 workers pink slips. Now, 10 times that number of jobs will never be created. So, on inauguration day, killed 1,000 jobs, 10,000 more jobs would have been coming. All of this, despite the fact that like it's been fairly clear that the pipeline wasn't gonna continue being constructed for years. I don't know why, what, they just have the workers waiting in the wings. But anyway, you'll be shocked to find out none of that's actually true. The State Department forecasted that no more than 50 jobs, some of which could be located in Canada, would be required to maintain the pipeline, and only 35 of them would be permanent, 15 would be temporary contractors. I believe years ago, I think we compared it to, you know, the average workforce of say an Arby's. Yes, Biden has killed one Arby's worth of pipeline maintenance workers. And that's sad. I like Arby's, but it's not thousands of jobs. That's not actually what happened. And when we think about the environmental damage that could have been done, let alone the fact that they cross lanes that they shouldn't be crossing and all that, yeah, Biden did a good thing. It's not necessarily the hardest thing to have done, but it's a good thing. Okay, let's turn to very different news. If you are squeamish about violence, you're gonna want to possibly tune out for just a minute or so. We're gonna show you footage of a cop using what is called a pit maneuver to attempt to stop the car of a pregnant woman that didn't pull over fast enough to satisfy the cop's need to be obeyed. It gets worse fast.
Nicole Harper was driving home on the I-67 and is alleged to have been clocked for speeding by Senior Corporal Rodney Dunn, who claims that she fled. But in the video, we see an obvious decrease in speed as Harper pulls into the right lane and activates her turn signal. She claims it was to indicate she was going to exit the interstate, as the area had a reduced shoulder. Regardless of Harper's actions and indications that she would stop, Corporal Dunn initiates a pit maneuver.
started.
Okay, Dan. So I'm going to let you go first. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I think one of the more chilling parts was at the end where his response to the situation is, groan, someone call EMS, the emergency services, because it looks like someone's injured here, whatever. As though I'm from Los Angeles. I've seen my fair share of high speed chases. These usually happen when the cars are refusing to slow down. That's when you do pit maneuvers. I've seen a bunch of them happen. A lot of them do end in rollovers or whatever. So many of them don't, but that's happening when you have a high speed chase that has been on TV for 45 minutes where the driver has done dangerous things. And it's we need to stop this driver even being on the road because they're causing a problem. Here, I don't know what the driver could possibly be doing better. As you see here, she's trying to indicate that she's exiting soon because that's often what you do. That shoulder there does not look like you can actually stay there and pull someone over. Yeah, if the cars were stopped there, then you'd be on a highway and cars would have to swoop around you as you're stopped. That's not safe to pull up at night. That's ridiculous. And SUVs specifically well, I won't say specifically, but just SUVs in general are the most rollover prone. I don't know what, I'll say this and I'll say what I actually think. One, I don't know what possibly possessed that officer to see that maneuver was necessary at that time. It was an obscene, absolutely obscene abuse of force. But my response to that is, this is the same obscene abuse of force, a similar obscene abuse of force we've seen in police forces around the country, which is why calls to not just, put some light reforms here and put some cameras there. No, fundamentally overhaul the way we do justice and, protecting the community in this country, because that's not protection. The stuff we've been talking about of police violence for the past year in minimum, but honestly, entire time of American society maximum, that stuff is not just a reform you can put away. This is an issue with the entire system.
Yeah, how do you, again, how do you, what course are we gonna fund and mandate to make that guy not respond to something that's crazier, more dangerous, more reckless than literally anything I've done in my entire life with, it flipped over now, somebody call EMS. I've spilled a bit of coffee while entering the studio and been more freaked out about it than that guy was when he just flipped an SUV. At that point, he has no idea if he has splattered the inside of that SUV with the brains of one or more people. He has no idea. It was a pregnant woman in the car. Now, thankfully, she was okay, as much as you can be when a cop has needlessly flipped your car. Because as we've pointed out millions of times over literally years, there's a lot of things that you can do to anger a cop, but there's nothing you can do like not submitting to his authority immediately and fully. You inconvenience a cop, and that is among the most dangerous things you can do in America. By the way, there's a lot of arguments, potentially for not buying SUVs, fuel mileage and all that. Maybe don't buy an SUV because there's cops out there. Wear your seatbelt because there's cops. Don't buy an SUV because there's cops and they might flip over your car at some point. Anyway, I want to give you details about the individual woman, though. This is Nicole Harper. She has sued the Arkansas State Police and accused them of negligently performing the pit maneuver, which seems like a pretty open and shut case right there. She was going 84 in a 70 when he flashed his lights to pull her over. If we could take a live shot of the 405 right now, literally every single car is doing that. Most of them won't flip over. It's LA, so maybe some of them will flip over, but most of them won't end up flipping over. But he decided to elevate this to that. When he finally caught up to her, it's not on the video that we have right there. The body mic caught his conversation. He asked her, "Why didn't you stop?" And she said, "Because I didn't feel it was safe." And he said, "Well, this is where you ended up." No, take him out. He can never be a cop again. And you know what? A couple generations later, still his kids, grandkids, don't let them be cops just to be safe. If the stone dead icy tone of him realizing he flipped an SUV doesn't convince you. Him berating the woman who he nearly killed should be enough. You don't need a judge, you don't need a jury, you don't need any sort of investigation. He can never be a cop again and give the woman whatever money she asked for.
Oh, but no, John, blue lives matter. Let's keep sociopaths on the force because that's what I want protecting and serving our community. Mm-hmm. That just makes the most sense. That, yeah, God, I hate the thought that people would even go to defend, oh, there's something that she was doing wrong. Oh, she was driving so unsafely, as though these same LARPers who love police officers so much have never sped in their Jeeps before. Just, it's so ridiculous.
Yeah. Ugh. Like, we've watched a lot of really rough police videos in just the last 2 months or so, but not having any reaction. I don't understand how you can do that. How could you, like, if Dan, if you accidentally hit the back of someone's car and that was it, you'd freak out, right? What has this guy done in the past that made him a person who could not freak out in that case?
The logical answer is that, like, yeah, being on the police force, you see a lot of gnarly things that numbs you a little bit. But I think you should still be able to find your empathy for other people, regardless of what job you're doing or how long you've done that job. And that's just so fundamentally devoid that he's going into like abusive relationship tactics. Like, look what you made me did. Look what you made me do kind of stuff. That's absolutely, he's a garbage human being.
Yeah, he threw a woman down the stairs, went to the bottom of the stairs and said, where did that end? Where did you end up with that, huh? That's what happened. Insane. Okay, we got more to come. We've got a little bit more good news. Then we unfortunately have Ben Shapiro. All that's coming up after this break. Okay, everyone, let's move into a little bit of good news in our continued coverage of Pride and what's going on in related issues in America. In America, same-sex marriage has been legal now for a few years after decades of activism and assurances from the right that if that were to happen, that's it for America. Everything's gonna shut down, we're done, it's gonna be like the fall of Rome. These are things that they said. America's in a rough spot, but I don't think it can be traced back to the same-sex marriage. And it looks like most people seem to agree because support for same-sex marriage has been inching up steadily for many years, actually. It's now at 70% overall. That's the highest in Gallup's tracking poll since 1996. The latest figure marks an increase of 10 percentage points since 2015, when it was ruled by SCOTUS that all states had to recognize same-sex marriage. And you can see that overall support generally going up, although not always from year to year, dating back to 1997. So let's stop there for a second. In 1997, it was at less than 30% support. Now it's at about 70%. Dan, what do you think about this?
I actually, there's a soul underneath here sometimes, it does exist. Interesting thought about that, because like 97, year 1997 at 30%, that's around the time I was born, more or less, right? And so to see that number at 70, amazing. We were born in the same hospital, essentially. To see that number at 70% in 2021, like in my lifetime, when I have like seen and experienced a lot of homophobia in my life, and to like see that in not just like my lifetime, but like in my young lifetime, I'm now able to be like a young adult where like my bisexuality is not something that is like constantly attacked other than just by me being online, but that just comes with the territory. But like in more overall in society, where I think it largely matters in like a legal context, that being part of the LGBTQ community like doesn't like afford the same sort of negative repercussions in society as it did even when I was like one or two. Like it's really like good news. It actually made me like kind of step back and pause for a moment. Like, wow, progress does happen sometimes, and like people can actually like truly materially benefit from it. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, it's a good point. It is steadily going up. I mean, you know, the cynic in me also says, really, 70%? Like, there are real issues, and like a third of the country is either opposed to it or isn't sure at this point. It's been legal for 6 years. It hasn't negatively affected you in any way, because how would it? Like, if you don't like it, don't get involved in it. I've gone my entire life, I've never had a same-sex marriage. Like, it's not gonna blindside you someday You just realize, oh my God, am I walking down an aisle? That's not how it works, okay? You're gonna be okay. So 70%. It has also, by the way, we wanna break it down amongst political groups. And the Democrats, 83%. Although it had been that way several years ago and that sort of dipped down and dipped back up. I understand there's natural variation in polls over time, but I don't like that. Anyway, Republicans though, it has been going up. It had been fairly steady, even dropping. Remember around 05, well, you don't because you were 6 years old. Under Bush, they made, that was like their big strategy to get voters out, was renewed attempts at the state level to basically do to gay Americans what they're doing to trans Americans right now. And so it actually went down. But now in the wake of it being legalized, when it was at 40, it's now at 55%. And I have to assume part of that is maybe a little bit more representation, you know, like on TV and things like that. Like it's a little bit harder to hate things when you see it and it's the exact same thing as your life. But the other is, yeah, no, it didn't have any negative effect. Like you can still get married as a straight person, you can still get divorced as a straight person. Most people watching this will do both of those things. I like to think that it's just, oh, it wasn't that bad. And to me, that's a sign that sometimes you just gotta do the thing and show people that it's not bad. Like some people are nervous about what, you know, like free college would be like. Well, what does that actually mean? You know, or switching over to Medicare for all. Do you really think people would hate either of those things 5-6 years after it? I kind of doubt that.
Yeah, the last point is that you can see this when you look at polls of a lot of issues over time, especially more recently, that they become partisan. But once it's like a settled issue, like obviously like the struggle continues and like the battles are truly never over. But like once things kind of reach their moment, like the Supreme Court rulings that affirm same-sex marriage in the United States, you kind of just see a general reversion that everything is trending upwards. Things still stay partisan, and that's kind of the issues when we handle partisan politics all the time. But at least you're seeing on all sides there's some improvement, because yeah, people are just living their lives and going, oh, my gay nephew or like my queer niece is like not really it is not really affecting me. In fact, I still love them very much, so all good.
Yeah. So my final question then will be, we're looking at this poll, we're seeing in Gallup steadily for the most part support amongst all political groups eventually for same-sex marriage goes up. So when or is this going to happen for transgender Americans? Because, you know, 16 years ago was like the high water mark of Republicans apparently figuring out, okay, so we got our tax cuts, we've got our police state, we got nothing else. So we're gonna make this all about fighting against gay people. I think that they get, you know, they're seeing polls like this, they can't really do that. That's not that popular. But they appear to think, based on what we're seeing in states around the country, that it is open season on transgender Americans. You can do whatever you want, you can say whatever you want, you can make that the, I was gonna say main legislative focus of the party, but the main focus is stopping people from voting. And now it's dueling with stopping critical race theory as the only other thing that Republicans do. So is in 6 years, are we gonna see numbers like this for, and I don't mean like, you know, some specific legal right, but just accepting that these are Americans, that these are humans in the same way as everyone else, that they have the same inherent dignity as everyone else, that it should not be one of the main focuses of a political party to make their lives a living hell, especially when they're the children. Well, what's your level of hope for that in like the next 5 to 10 years?
5 to 10 years, abysmally, because like what's been said, I think, maybe even by James Baldwin, I'll paraphrase it for TV14, but like America needs an other, that there needs to be an other person to point to. Cynically speaking, unless there's something that can be pointed to that is more otherable to conservatives than trans folks, I think you're right, they're gonna be a like cudgel for a while. It just is the means to say that's important for allies, other folks in the queer community who feel like, oh, we can just relax now, we've gotten rights, everything's all chill. Like no, the struggle continues to continue making sure that everyone is included when we say that like everyone has rights. So yeah. Unfortunately, it's gonna take a while, but I think that should embolden allies and everyone else alike to like get ready for that battle and continue. It's the next part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what accelerates that process, assuming that it's going to happen, but.
Well, a legal case, honestly. It's like anytime something comes up in front of the Supreme Court, where like it eventually leaves this era of like, oh, what will Marjorie Greene or like what will the Democrats pretend to do, will give lip service to, but ultimately like watered down and like deprioritized because they want to do something else. Like it's gonna ultimately take a Supreme Court case, but of course that is very bleak, essentially, because we know what the Supreme Court looks like. But you never know. That's true. Like run right down the middle with someone's like real rights with something, and you could be surprised. Sometimes it happens, but. Yeah, it's really gonna have to transcend our regular politics for anything to move in either way. And I'm not comfortable with what way it would move considering the Supreme Court.
I definitely agree about the Supreme Court. What I wonder though is like with gay Americans, it seemed like there really was sort of one core question. It's not the only question. Obviously there are others, but whether you will be legally allowed to marry was such a centerpiece of the conversation nationally. It's not that there aren't legal questions or that are unfortunately being raised by Republicans when it comes to trans Americans, like being able to play in the sports that you want or being able to go into the bathroom you want. But I don't know, it seems like it's more of a, can we attack this group without suffering any social, cultural, political consequences? And my fear is that it is it is everywhere. It is so many states in just the last few months. This is what they've been focusing on. And coming from the Democrats feels like mostly the sound of silence. Like they're not standing up in support of that community, which unfortunately reminds me of what happened with this. A lot of Democrats were just sort of like biding their time, like we'll see if the SCOTUS makes it legal, but I'm not gonna stick my neck out before then. And then a lot of them would later have to pretend to care about it, like Hillary Clinton eventually did, and Obama and all that.
Yeah, like that's literally what Obama was doing. Notably, Joe Biden made a gaffe about the administration being in favor of same-sex marriage, which forced Obama to then like officially say that publicly. Like, I mean, that's like weird. I guess we'll score one for Uncle Joe, broken clocks right twice a day. But like,
exactly.
I don't think we can rely on like rainbow capitalism or like rainbow washing and these things to be the only sort of allyships that LGBTQ people can like rely on. It has to be Democrats who don't just opportunistically choose, oh, well, we can't talk about these issues because all of our priorities are so important. I'm so tired of Democrats making excuses in different cases for inaction when it's like, listen, the news cycle is going to exist. You're going to be criticized for things that don't matter. So start being criticized for things that do matter by doing actual things and by standing up and taking stands for things. It turns out people like when elected officials take stands. Interesting.
Yeah. I agree. Well, we only have a couple more minutes for a hard out, so let's jump into this last topic. I know it's going to be one that you're going to enjoy, Dan. Ben Shapiro has thoughts about using the N-word, and that's what we've all been waiting for. That's what 2021 needed. Here he is.
I will say that when it comes to the use of the N-word, there is a difference between calling a black person an N-word with an ER at the end and in jest using the N-word that ends with an A to describe a white person. Now, the latter is also really crude and gross and stupid. It's not racist in the same way that it would be if you were just shouting the N-word at a black person, which is the height of racism, obviously, in American society. But
that's your buddy.
I'm so positively glad you included that part of the quote, because I have my non-serious approach and my serious approach. My non-serious approach is that we are living in Boondocks episodes repeatedly, and that's all that's happening. There's literally an episode in season 2 that was about a teacher who called one of the students the N-word, and they're making that argument. No, it's versus R. It's a whole different thing. And it was based on a real event that happened in Kentucky in 2005. Like, this is just conservative Rush Limbaugh did a thing about this. This is another indication that like Ben Shapiro was supposed to be the gladiator that saves the GOP and like refreshes them with new young blood and like fresh perspectives. No, it's just this crap. But the important point you had there is when he said calling someone the N-word and shouting that to them in the street, that's the height of racism in America. I mean, he truly believes that, or like wants people to believe that. That's his tell, because when it comes to the rest of his show, he's attacking critical race theory because these people want you to believe that America is more racist than it really is, than shoving it down your throat. Or police brutality, when it's like the statistics actually show that it happens more to white people. So these are people are complaining about nothing. Racism doesn't really exist. Anytime someone brings up racism because it happens a lot in society, Ben Shapiro is the first to say, well, actually, if you would know, A, rap music is garbage, and B, there's no such thing as racism, especially not for me. So like that's been in a nutshell for you. It's not surprising, but it was a great clip. That was some great content for Twitter, honestly. Shout out to Jason Campbell for continuing to break his brain watching the Daily Wire network on a daily basis. So there's that.
That's true. And look, he says, you know, even the A version is still gross and crude, but not racist. Okay, yeah, it's so not racist that you'll notice, hey Ben, why aren't you saying that version? If it's just gross, I can say gross things. Poop, for instance, I don't get in trouble for saying gross things. I wouldn't say a racist thing though. And you seem to have a similar rule on your show, at least, I should say. So he tries to cover himself a little bit there. Although notably really fast, back in 2019, when Kyle Kashub, one of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas survivors, got in trouble for using the ER version over and over and over again, he had this tweet, which we're gonna put up very briefly, defending him, saying it's an insane, cruel standard to expect him to have not used the ER version over and over and over again. Interesting. Anyway, for our linear audience, thank you for being here. We've got more coming up on Twitch and YouTube after this. Hello, Twitch, YouTube. Thank you for still being here. Anyway, we've got a lot more to talk about. We got some fun stuff coming up. Before that, though, I did want to let you know about something that we had told you about a couple weeks ago. It's now moving towards the end, Aspiration Thursdays. So this is the final installment today of hashtag Aspiration Thursdays. This is a 4-week social media series of informative and engaging polls available on the Young Turks, at the Young Turks on Instagram. This is our partnership with Aspiration, an ethical banking organization that we've talked about quite a bit. So that is closing out today. Head to the Young Turks Instagram so that you can take part in that. Also, I'm being told that there is a fun thing happening on the main show today with Cenk and Anna. You guys definitely have to catch it live at 6 p.m. Eastern time, 3 p.m. Pacific time, youtube.com/the Young Turks. I also have to, because I have no idea what that's referring to. Fun might mean scary. We'll see what ends up happening. I don't know what it is. Hopefully it'll be cool. So that's all coming up soon. Really fast before we launch into the news, let me read a couple super chats. Franklin Sharpslicer says, in reference to the Chipotle story, pay the employees up 4%. The CEO's finances didn't make a dent. Gee, how billionaires cry. They spend less for soft TP, my, my. Please, sir, may we have more? Would it scar you just a percentage more? So that's about how they're saying that Chipotle is having to raise their prices because they have to pay their employees more when their CEO makes $38 million. And they did this incredibly expensive move of their headquarters because the CEO wanted to live in a particular city. Weird that that didn't make it into the NBC News story. Anyway, and let's see. Styx Dragon says in the, I believe it was the Twitch comments. By the way, I asked a question in a super chat a few days ago that you never answered. If the masses let you pick a dragon name, what would it be? I don't know. Like, if it was truthful, I'd want it to be a successfully published fantasy author dragon, but that isn't possible yet. So we'll return to that at some point and see what can happen. Anyway, and it looks like my reference to poop was clipped out on Twitch. Thanks, Twitch. Keep being you, Twitch. Anyway, with that, let's get back into the news. And now it's time for news from around the world. And meanwhile, in. It's been a little bit since I've done that. Can you tell? Anyway, meanwhile, in Britain, raccoon dogs. That's the news. There are raccoon dogs in Britain, and apparently it's a bit of a problem. It's an exotic member of the fox family that's native to Japan, China, and Siberia, known there as a tanuki, by the way. They're one of the most destructive invasive species at risk of becoming established in Britain. They say at risk of becoming established. I say please become established, because that is a raccoon dog. You know what else is? This is a raccoon dog. And also, that is very much a raccoon dog right there. And you tell me it's an invasive species? Invade me. invade my state, invade my very home, raccoon dog. Look at that thing. Okay, are there some concerns? There are, and we'll turn to them in just 1 second. But Dan, if something has to invade your country, let it be that.
Listen, I'm now for open borders, because look at the cute Basura boys. Just, this is so nice right there. Oh my God, this is so great. I think there are a lot of interesting dogs out there, and I think like breeding dog culture has become really controversial because some of these dogs are like really live unhealthy lives because of as a result of it. But like, I know there's problems. There's going to be problems because doing news means everything beautiful gets ruined at some point. But they're so cute. Can we at least have them on an island or something?
Yeah, well, you're right. Everything does get ruined by the news, by Twitter. Come up with a term, then release it out there. People will misuse it. But anyway, I'm gonna ruin raccoon dogs for you a little bit. But first, the history. We're gonna pretend that this is a Rachel Maddow monologue. Raccoon dogs were introduced into the old Soviet Union in the mid 20th century, including in Baltic states such as Latvia. Historically farmed for fur. Isn't that adorable? I wonder what they look like shaved. Raccoon dogs escaped and have spread rapidly through continental Europe in recent years, colonizing northern European countries such as Finland, Sweden, and Denmark, despite eradication efforts, which, geez, and being sighted in France, Germany, Poland, and the Netherlands. That is an amazing adventure that they have spread out all over the place. They've been kept in Britain as exotic pets, but since 2019, it's been illegal to buy or sell one. And the Mammal Society, they have the best parties, is calling on people to report any sightings of the animals because apparently they pose a threat to rare native species, including amphibians, small mammals, and ground nesting birds. Also, they can transmit a number of diseases to humans, which obviously people are a little bit concerned about recently. But that said, they're really adorable. Honestly, eat the amphibians. How great were the ground nesting birds anyway? Get up in a tree, you stupid bird. We got raccoon dogs coming in.
It's organic pest control. Just keep it.
Exactly. Just keep it. Meanwhile, in China, they are apparently having, according to the numbers we've seen, a great amount of success with vaccination. For more than a week now, they've averaged about 20 million people being vaccinated against COVID-19 every single day. At this rate, that means that they would have fully vaccinated the entire population of the UK in less than 1 week. And because of that success, they now account for more than half of the 35 million people being vaccinated around the entire world every day. And we have a little chart actually where you can see that as world progress has been going up, a lot of it is being driven by Chinese vaccination. So, I mean, considering the number of people there and the fact that, you know, obviously they were very hard hit initially by it, great to see some countries doing well with vaccination, others not so much for reasons that are fairly obvious and we've talked about a lot.
Yeah, for sure. We've definitely talked about a lot of those reasons, largely having to do with the countries that are able to have the vaccines, have such an abundance of vaccines that in America, we have people who are openly turning down the vaccines for any number of reasons. I think someone who's part of African government somewhere said recently said that it is like, I'm paraphrasing, but it's just like ridiculous and insane that America's at the point where they're choosing to, Americans are choosing to refuse the vaccine. Meanwhile, there are countries that are at 1 or 2% levels of vaccinating their population. And this doesn't end. Americans can't do their happy-go-lucky travel around the world thing until other places are able to slow their own spread. So it's actually in Americans' best interest to help, which is actually happening. I think we're going to be sending over, I think, a couple like 100 million doses across the world at least a certain point. And America bought them, got a deal with Pfizer. So it's like at a pretty decent rate at which we're buying them. So hopefully there are better signs of things to come. Thanks to pressure from the left on making sure that vaccines were spread equally across the world. So good for that.
Exactly. Oh, we'll have those numbers for you in just 1 second. Just really fast though, I want to let you know that China too is helping vaccinate other countries. You know, when we were doing that pressure over the past few months to get Biden to do this, one of the things we were saying was other countries are doing this. Russia is sending vaccines to poor countries that don't have access to them. China is doing it. And like a little bit, I'm sure they're doing it to help out, but a lot of it is vaccine diplomacy. They are endearing themselves to the population, understandably so, since they're saving lives. We should do the same. They've supplied 350 million doses already to more than 75 nations. And WHO approval should now trigger the further distribution of both of the vaccines that they're using, which are different than the ones we are. One of them doesn't even seem all that amazing. The other one's okay. They will be sending those out to low-income countries. So 350 million already. Now, thanks to the pressure that Dan was talking about, the Biden administration announced earlier today that they're going to be buying 500 million doses of Pfizer's coronavirus vaccine to donate to the world. The first 200 million will be distributed this year, with the next 300 million in the first half of next year, which sounds fine. But like, China's already done 350 million. You're talking about over the next 6 months, we're going to send 200 million. I mean, I guess it's better than not doing it, but you're going to have a lot of suffering and death long before those doses ever make it to the countries that desperately need them.
Yeah. Hopefully we hear, I only heard about like Pfizer from this information, but there are other companies that are making this vaccine that could hopefully contribute to the volume that's at least coming through there. So I really hope that we can ramp up and other countries able to go through their approval processes so that we can get it out to as many people as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And by the way, as a reminder of how necessary this is, India's health ministry data showed 6,148 deaths over a 124-hour period. And I mentioned that mainly because I don't hear the media talking about India that much anymore. There was like a good week where we were all together and not wanting them to die, and now kind of moved on. It might even be higher than that. One area is saying that they lost 9,400 people. The cases have gone down, it's less than 100,000. Although again, that's not actually reflective of how much COVID is in India right now. But yeah, China's doing some good work. We need to ramp it up too, because people are really suffering. And by the way, to those in the chat that are saying, hey John, invasive species are actually really disruptive, I get it. I'm just joking, because they're really cute. I get that invasive species are really bad. I mean, hell, look at what Americans do when they go into other countries. See, am I gonna get attacked like Ilhan Omar? Probably not. Why is that? Anyway, we've had a little bit of fun. Let's have a bit more. Let's jump into this. Over the last day, we've learned more about Sherry Tenpenny. Now you might be saying, wait, who's Sherry Tenpenny and why should I care? Well, if that's the case, then you apparently missed her revealing as one of Ohio's vaccine experts the fact that the vaccine can make you magnetic, and it, like magnetism, is now spreading. But first, I want to give you just a brief bit of what we showed you yesterday. Here is Sherry Tenpenny.
You've seen the pictures all over the internet of people who've had these shots and now they're magnetized. They can put a key on their forehead, it sticks. They can put spoons and forks all over them and they can stick.
Okay, that's amazing. Anyway, you can watch our video from yesterday if you want her full comments, but that wasn't all that happened yesterday. She has backup. Take a look at this.
By the way, so I just found out something when I was on lunch and I wanted to show it to you. We were talking about Dr. Tenpenny's testimony about magnetic vaccine crystals. So this is what I found out. So I have a key and a bobby pin here. Explain to me why the key sticks to me. It sticks to my neck too. I got those. Yeah, so if somebody can explain this, that would be great. Any questions?
A few. Can we explain why the key stuck to your chest? Oh, I don't know, you got sweaty chest flesh, I guess. Is that one possible explanation? I too sweat. If you prick me with a key, does it not stick to me sometimes, Dan?
Shout out to the Ohio channel playing the hit since 1996. That's just great. Like, that's just wonderful television. I can't believe that's not pay-per-view. I'd watch that over Mayweather all any day. And the best part is if you can pick, all I like to do during these things is pick a person in the video in the back to look at their reaction. There's a woman in the top left-hand corner who starts to gawk after she does the neck thing. I will start looking at my favorite. Yeah, she looks to the left there. Yep, I must be gone there, but she's just like, what? And later on, she's just like, I cannot believe this is actually happening. Like, she's gonna This is doing this. Wow. This is those are the most human moments to me, because you have to acknowledge how insane that is. I mean, truly, that combined with the Louis Gohmert clip from earlier this week, those two are just mind boggling. Like, I don't even know where to begin bringing cogent political analysis to those statements, points of fact, only to say that this is where the constant naysaying and like anti-science propaganda that's been coming from the right wing, even though they're trying to make it seem like they are pro-science, this is what it leads to.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I do want to give credit to the woman for sticking with the routine despite the thing not sticking to her for the most part. Like, she kept trying to stick it to her neck and it would fall off. Like, but if it falls off, shouldn't you question the magnetic thing? I mean, shouldn't that cause you, like you say, any questions? But shouldn't you have questions? Shouldn't you question the fact that the vast majority of keys manufactured in America are not magnetic to begin with? They're not made of metals that are magnetic. That seems like the sort of, not all metals are magnetic. That's a pretty core scientific fact. Maybe look into that too. And then we're gonna have more on Sherry Tenpenny. Really fast question though. And is this basically just, hey, we've opened up a door where people who regrettably, thanks to the fact that America doesn't really do anything about mental illness, that these are just people who have, you know, they have issues and they are being injected into politics. They're stuffed full of conspiracy theories and misinformation, and people scare the hell out of them and then they send them out to events like this. Is that really just what we're seeing?
I think there's,
how would you even know?
Yeah, I think there's a distinction, because in these cases, and I think people have to be careful during the Trump administration too, that there are also like people who are neurodivergent who go through like mental illness struggles and things like that too, and also don't believe bat crap crazy propaganda. That so like we have to allow for that possibility. But I think, and I appreciate you, John, for incorporating compassion into your commentary as much as you can, but like there is something to be said about how these people are sort of preyed upon and taken advantage of for being sort of like scared, constantly being fed propaganda to scare them. And then in this fragile moment, now they are believing these conspiracy theories. Now, it's not like these conspiracy theories are because they have a mental illness that might predispose them to thinking things that aren't there do exist, because they're people who go on TV to preach about things that don't exist that they say are actually there. So we can't go around diagnosing all of these people. But I think goes to say on like a personal, like on an on the ground level, like in the Ohio State House right there, I think it's true that a lot of the people on the right see these people is like docile and feeble-minded and easy to take advantage of and get money from. That's really just like when it comes down at the end of the day. That's why they charge $500 for their QAnon rallies. Because like, whether you believe it or not, we're getting paid. That's really what they believe in. And there are real world ramifications to this thing, which is I think what we're starting to come at with. Because really fast, John, there's all those stories about people who have lost their parents and grandparents because they watch Fox News all the time. I don't think all of people's parents and grandparents are like, you know, people have mental illnesses here and there, but I think those might be there regardless. But to be preying on people who are in vulnerable situations, who are in information silos, especially when you're telling them not to trust any other media organizations but your own, yeah, that does lead to a situation where it does feel very exploitative, and you start to wonder, do Republican operatives know what they're doing? And I've seen Roger Stone talk before, so the answer is absolutely.
That's true. Yeah, you're totally right. These people exist in these information silos. We've created basically in social media knowledge deserts, vast areas, communities that are walled off from actually getting information. But you did talk there about money, which provides a great intro into our next section. Meanwhile, in Griff Nation, no, but we really do have that though. Sherry Tenpenny. Oh no. Sorry, we're gonna pause on the last few graphics as last thing. We might have to wait till tomorrow for the Marjorie stuff. But you've probably seen the video going around of the supposed vaccine, the anti-vaccine expert Sherry Tenpenny, talking about people sticking forks and spoons to themselves because they're magnetic, which is totally not true. And you might wonder, why do this? Why humiliate yourself spreading complete misinformation and endangering the lives of people who need to be vaccinated. Well, what if I were to tell you there's some money in it? I don't even know if it's much money, but there's definitely some money. Because as was pointed out by Media Matters' Eric Hananoki, if you're curious about the grifting aspect of her claims, she sells things like live training for less than $200. She has premium podcast subscriptions for $240. Man, I didn't even know a podcast subscription could cost $240. That's a good amount of money. Eric also went onto her website and found things like this 6-week intensive boot camp for mastering vaccine info. They left off the miss by accident for $500. She also has, because of course, an online supplement store, probably selling the same mashed, like ground up gorilla brain that Alex Jones sells, that like gives you alpha wave energy and makes you rock hard. That's probably what's going on. But by the way, we're gonna comment on this, but I decided, well, no, Eric, thank you for all that, but I gotta go to her website. I gotta see what else she has. And I found something that I should have predicted. Of course, she's gonna have Mike Lindell and MyPillow. You can order MyPillow via Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, because they're made with an exclusive silk microweave that keeps the vaccine out of your brain. It's basically just, it's an all you can eat grift buffet for you, Dan. What do you think?
Order now with promo code institutionalized and get 15% off your first MyPillow. I think the more like seeing the MyPillow there was like the icing on the cake, but like the cherry on top. But seeing the supplements is like, oh, we're going right into it. Like it's, oh, yeah. Well, you already don't trust the vaccines. Well, let me interest you in these supplements over here. Oh, you're already having questions about the validity of these things. Well, let's just go over here for these classes that I can offer you. Is that, yeah, I'm also with you. $250, is that monthly? Is that the annual subscription? Is that lifetime? Like, what's the rate on that? And I don't know, maybe TYT membership, we gotta adjust those numbers a little bit. I'm just kidding.
I don't, let's not. But let's see about those pillows. They do look good. Anyway, yeah, look, no, I understand. You know, everybody's gotta survive. Surviving by selling crappy stuff like this while you convince people to expose themselves to a fatal illness. Oh, that's among the worst grifts. You know, it's not as bad as someone like Tucker Carlson, because he misinforms way more people, 100,000 times more people on a daily basis about vaccines than she could ever hope to. But this is basically what the world is. It has become easier to monetize literally anything you want than ever before. Go to Substack, you can see for yourself. And regular people, they're the ones that lose out. They lose their money, they potentially lose their lives, they lose healthy relationships with their family because they've gone insane and eventually even their family members can't take it anymore. And that is what happens when you live in Grift Nation. Anyway, we've only got one more minute. I wanna make sure that we have time. Dan, you're occasionally on the show and we're always lucky when you are, but when you're not on the show, you still exist and you produce amazing content of your own. Where can people see that?
Oh, thank you, John. YouTube.com/DanFromTheInternet for Power Report, my semi-monthly political talk show, interviewing really fun guests. Got a lot more cool ones coming up soon. And nice. Fun videos also happen there. And just follow me on Twitter, Dan from the Web, where I'm finding out which billionaire to potentially, oh wait, that's legally actionable. Never mind, just follow me on Twitter.
Metaphoric guillotines only, people. Okay.
Minecraft guillotines.
Exactly. Anyway, thank you everybody for watching the new supersized version of the show. Coming up right after this on YouTube, on Twitch, available to members, Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie. It's gonna be amazing. People are loving this first week. Become a part of the craze. You don't have to pay $250 a month. You don't have to ingest any ground up raccoon dog. It's coming up right now where you're watching this. And for my part, thank you for being here. Until next time, stay safe out there, stay sane out there, and I'll see you soon. Is Fox News even really a Fox News network anymore, or is it something else? And if it's not news, does that matter? should that matter monetarily? Is there anything that we, those who either don't watch Fox or when we do because we need to know what these insane people are saying, even though it grates on our sanity, what can we do about it? Well, we're joined by someone who's gonna help us discuss this, researcher and writer for Media Matters for America, Nikki McCann Ramirez. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, John, great to be here.
Very glad to have you here. You had a piece on Insider laying out all of this and more about Fox's, what they've done over the past few years, especially the last year during the pandemic, their funding and all of that. What led to this piece for Insider?
Yeah, so the thing that really triggered this piece for me was the night that Tucker Carlson kind of went all in on the great replacement conspiracy theory. The night he went all in and then the subsequent nights where he doubled down. For me, seeing that, and I have a bit of a background in research and extremism, and seeing the way Fox News reacted, the way Lachlan Murdoch and the network just kind of immediately backed something that in any sane world would have gotten someone kicked off the air, that to me kind of indicated to me that there's really no line that Fox News won't let Tucker Carlson cross. And you can see it very clearly in the way they've kind of made him the face of the network, are branding a lot of their new subscription services around him. And it really kind of pushed me to write this piece about how there is no line Fox won't let Tucker Carlson cross. There's no line they won't let their opinion host cross. And they're really pulling back the amount of investment and development they put into their news side in order to bolster up and prop up an opinion side that's using the veneer of the name news to push misinformation, reactionary extremism, and all in all, damage the American public.
So very interesting, you raise a lot of great points there. So is it your belief that, in theory, were we to go back 10 years or so, and Glenn Beck was to push Great Replacement, or Bill O'Reilly was to just completely lie about vaccines over and over and over again as hundreds of thousands of people are dying, do you believe that they would have potentially been pushed out as a result of that?
I don't think so. I think Fox has always had this problem, especially with their like opinion hosts, the real kind of like primetime set. I think Fox only pushes out hosts when they already view them as expendable. We saw what happened with Shep Smith. We saw what happened with a couple hosts over on the Fox Business Network. And that's why I really kind of wanted to focus on this monetary aspect. If you want to force a change at Fox News, simple backlash against what many people could perceive as a one-off statement by a host isn't going to do it. And I think what's useful about my job and what we do at Media Matters is that we are watching Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, we're really watching the entire network every day of the year. So we can see these patterns and we can lay out to people how it isn't enough to simply say, oh, this statement was bad. The extremism is a feature, not a bug of the network. So if you want to force a change within the network, you have to go for their bottom line. You have to make it impossible for Fox News to continue to get away with funding these types of statements, the misinformation, the outright lies, and of course, the violent extremism. And I think unless Fox feels that financial pressure, and unless advertisers and cable companies really pull back and say, you're not a safe investment, Fox News is gonna keep doing what it's doing.
And you know, to your point about one line and the reaction to it being enough to push someone out, I mean, Media Matters, obviously, as you say, you track all of this, and you've been doing so for many years. Often the right hates it. They hate that you guys literally just put up what they say. Like for some reason, yeah, that's always been weird to them that someone would do that. But I believe it was maybe within the last 2 years, you all had a special thing about Tucker Carlson where you had dug into his appearances on the Bubba the Love Sponge show. And when I saw that he suffered no consequences from the Iraqis are semi-literate primitive monkeys, I thought, okay, well, we're done with this. There's nothing that he could say. Him just shouting the N-word until his throat gave out might not be enough at this point. So then if that's not enough, then if people want Fox to change, either because maybe they're right-wingers who don't want the only form of right-wing media to be undiluted nonsense, or because they don't want them to keep convincing their family members to be exposed and die of an illness, what can we do? What should we do?
So I think the two big things here are to pressure advertisers to drop the network entirely. I think we've seen it a couple times when Tucker, Laura, Sean Hannity will say something kind of like really outlandish, and a couple like blue chip advertisers will pull their ads off the show, but only that specific show. And Fox has often defended themselves like, oh, we can move advertising to other parts of the network. And that's why we need advertisers to drop the network entirely. The core of Fox News Network is their opinion side. It's not the news side. So any dollar that you are giving Fox News, even if that ad money is being put on like the 8 or 9 a.m. hour, is still funding the vitriol and the bile that is emblematic of the network. The second thing that we want consumers specifically to do is to, if they can, ask their cable company to drop Fox News. Fox News only gets an average during primetime about like 2 to 4 million viewers per hour. It fluctuates. I think the most recent numbers for Tucker Carlson tonight had him at around 3 million for ratings. And there are tens of millions of households in the United States who are paying for a cable package. And that means they're paying for Fox News. If you do not want to fund this, if you do not want to be giving your money to a network that has made it its mission to set aside the truth and simply provide reactionary commentary to American households, if you don't want to fund that, tell your cable company. Fox is in the process of renegotiating tons of its cable contracts, its cable subscriber fee contracts. And we are at a great moment in time to put pressure on those companies to stop giving the network special treatment. And like you said, there is a well-documented archive of everything that has been said on the network, not only from Media Matters, but groups like Right Wing Watch, other groups like the Daily Beast, I think does a really great job, and Mediaite. There is a very extensive public archive of the toxicity of this network. And at this point, I think advertisers and cable companies don't have an excuse. They can't feign ignorance. Either they're complicit or they pull out.
Yeah. And they Fox is going to try to get them to be like, hey, you know, Laura Ingraham's crazy, but like, hey, no, it's totally cool in the morning or whatever. And they might, you know, they want to reach crazy old Republicans, so they might be willing to do that. But you're right, it is still funding the same thing. And by the way, I think that Media Matters has done a good job, especially over the past quarter or so, to point out that very often the news that they're covering in the morning is just, hey, here's a thing Tucker Carlson said last night. Let's play and respond to Tucker Carlson, or literally bringing Tucker Carlson on those programs. So, but my question is, they don't seem to care when they lose the advertising on the night stuff. As you point out, they can do the advertising on the other parts. Do we know for sure, if we were to wipe out the morning advertising and all they had was, you know, catheter kits and stuff like that, would that actually be a danger to them? Like with Fox Nation and the carrier fees and stuff like that, is losing the advertising that significant?
I think it's significant. I think first of all, what people need to understand is you can't boycott the advertisers or boycott the cable companies. You have to do them both together. If the network is bad, it's bad across the board. And I think it's really important for people to understand that the way a network is treated by advertisers is a huge signal to cable companies. So even if Fox loses all of its like blue chip advertiser revenue and is left with like catheters and MyPillow, they can still kind of even if they lose all those advertisers, they can still make money off cable subscriptions. So you need to pressure the network of companies that are propping up Fox News, whether they be cable companies, advertisers. I think Fox Nation is another conversation. I think with the launch of Fox Nation, Fox is trying to insulate themselves from this backlash they're seeing, because it's been happening for years. And I think while they kind of have to paint a pretty picture for people investing in them, like, oh, this is not a big deal, I think it is a big deal. I think that's why they're kind of pivoting to more to what they see as a potentially more stable form of revenue, because I think they see people abandoning them. And I think once you kind of destabilize that network of companies that are propping them up, and cable companies see, oh, advertisers don't like this channel, why are we letting them charge us 3 times more than other networks to carry them? I think you need to have both to really have an effective accountability campaign happen.
Okay, well, I think it's an interesting plan. If you're watching this, you want more information, Nikki's work is up at Insider, titled Fox News isn't even pretending to be a news network anymore. You can get more information about how the interplay between the network and the advertisers works, what the sort of timeline is for it as well. So definitely check that out. And Nikki, we really appreciate your work. We have for a very long time. We love Media Matters, but thank you for joining us today as well.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.